Radio Chelly Effect is sponsored by WallStreetWindow.com and listeners like you.
And now the most underrated voice in all media, Chuck O'Chelly.
March 15, 2022, allegedly, according to that thing we call a calendar. This, indeed, is the show you were looking for. How do I know that? Because you're hearing me say this. Anyway, it's Tuesday, the second broadcast day of the week on O'Chelly.com, but of course, most of you will catch this further on down the stream by your fondle slab of choice, your applicable application, your podcatcher du jour. So, here we are. Anyway, no matter who you are, where you are, when you are, welcome. This Tuesday is a little different, definitely, because I've got a rare guest on in the first hour, Len Osanek, the guy behind Black Op Radio. Now, Len has only been on the show one other time. And not because I didn't want him on. I would love to talk to Len more often. But you know what? He's a busy guy. He's got a recording studio. He does other work for sure. Obviously, Black Op Radio, I'm a listener. I'm a fan. I was listening to it before I started doing this. And got to tell you, the best repository altogether on the JFK assassination. But also, Len has covered other things in Black Op Radio's history. And I've bought the archive more than once. Go over there to blackopradio.com, support Len Osanek, because I do. Okay. I've got a couple of Black Op t-shirts. Let me think now. I don't think I ever bought a hat. I wanted a hat. I never got a hat. But I definitely bought the archive a couple of times. I bought some downloads. And everything that Len's got over there at Black Op Radio is well worth the price of admission. Just so you know, in the second hour, we're going to have Ruckus from Alternate Current Radio on, but we'll get there when we get there. Len Osanek, how you doing tonight, sir?
Hello, Mr. O'Chelly. Pleasure to be speaking to you. And I don't know why we haven't spoken more often, but actually just no real reason. But anyway, I'm glad to be on, so thank you for inviting me.
You may recall some years ago, I used to just email questions to you and Jim DiEugenio. I would enter little thoughts in there and try and get you guys to talk about certain things, especially because I had a very serious, would I call it a grudge? No, I had a very serious attitude problem with one particular author who's named Judy. And, you know, I certainly always wanted Jim to continue to talk about that on your show, since DiEugenio is like your regular man on the show there. But he wasn't the first one, because I remember the days when Jim Fetzer was on there more regularly. That was way earlier on. And, geez, how long, I know the answer to this question, by the way, but I'm asking you just, you know, for the listener. How long has Black Op Radio been in existence, sir?
Since the year 2000. So yeah, the year 2000. So I guess it's 22 seasons.
Wow.
Or 23. What do you count the year? But anyway, more than 20 years. More than 20 years. And yeah, I had a co-host to start with, Anita Langley, mm-hmm. and various people along the way. And I think even Greg Burnham might have been on often, and I just had people who were doing something on, and then Jim Fetzer just kind of went sideways for me, and then when I kind of hooked up with Jim DiEugenio, the thing with him is that he's in LA and he's kind of at a focal point for research, in that area, mm-hmm. and people contact him, so I often like to hear what's news to him. You know, and of course, he just wrote this new documentary for Oliver Stone. So it's good that I have him on every second week. And, just in lieu of other people, I mean, I do try to have as many other authors on as I can, but it's just once a week show. So I try not to push myself too hard. You did mention I have other interests. So I try to balance that out, that I have an interest in the world we live in and an interest in American history. And I have, so much time in the day, so I basically, had my interest up with the JFK assassination. A little bit about Bobby Kennedy, a little bit about Martin Luther King, and then I don't know too much about Malcolm X, but then you start getting into all these things that kind of join themselves kind of at the hip, the intelligence operations, MK Ultra, you know, all mind control, the Department of Defense, and all their funding. These, it's just, yeah, quite a few things that link together, right. Although they're not all, they're at arm's length, but, you know, it's of interest.
Well, other great stuff in the archive over there again. And if you go over to blackopradio.com right now, you'll find the current year available publicly, you know, just right out there. Anybody can go and download it and listen to it. But I think the year before you might still leave open to the public. But then if you want to go further back, well, you might have to purchase it because, look, storage is a pain in the neck. So, you know, quite honestly, you want to dig in. And if you do dig in, you'll find interviews with people like Doug Valentine. You'll find interviews on topics about 9/11 directly. Some of the research that went into that, which, again, as you said, ties directly into the intelligence agencies and the happenings, so to speak, in governmental circles and also in the darker circles, the creatures that, oh, I don't know, subsist below and above the governments, and a lot of interesting stuff there. So, I mean, I'm just saying there's a range. It's not all right. Just JFK and, stuff, yeah.
And let me just mention that since I do sell some of my old shows because it's been, you know, after like 15 years or so, I would sell a disc or something, but they're $10 mm-hmm. for a year. So you get 52 shows for $10, and a lot of times people are finding, oh, there's a rare author. You know, he's passed away. How can I hear more about him? People often say, okay, well, I'll support the show. I'll get it right away. It's a direct download. So that's how I kind of support my bandwidth and you know, storage and all that. So by selling shows. And I always have about 2 years up for free.
Right.
And then if you want to find something on 2009, you get it by direct download. And there's 52 shows. And back in the old days, I had three parts. I usually had two or three different guests on.
Mm-hmm.
So it's usually about two guests and maybe sometimes only one if it's long, you know. But so that's how, you know, I support the show by offering those things. I think it's reasonable. For $10, you get 52 shows. But some of the people, yeah. Look, when I did my 1,000th show, I was not happily reminded, I guess, that about over 50 of my guests had passed away. You know, the people like Mark Lanes and just like big people in the research community have passed away over that 20-year span.
Oh, right. I was going to say, I mean, there's actually a bunch of authors who nobody can interview anymore because they're no longer among us that you spoke to. And also witnesses, by the way, you know, actual direct witnesses, everybody from, say, James Tague to Marianne Moorman, I think, was on your show. You know, different reporters who were there in Dallas at the time, a whole bunch of people that were witnesses. So, you know, it's very interesting. And each conference that came up for several years also, you know, lent his support to those conferences, was certainly, you know, in one way or another had to be part of it because, quite frankly, again, I find that almost anybody who is engaged on the internet... Okay, in JFK research, absolutely cannot avoid going to Black Op Radio because here is where we do find a lot of the news. It's where I first heard about Doug Horn's work before I wound up purchasing the 5-volume set, you know, and things like this. And even somebody like me who is sort of plugged in with some of the authors and was sort of, you know, not on the West Coast, but on the East Coast, right? Of America doing the research I was doing, I was able to be more well-informed. And the funniest thing about that, quite frankly, is I don't know if you remember, I told you a long time ago, but I don't know if you remember who it is that actually turned me on to Black Op Radio because it's extremely ironic as to who did it. Oh, and another highlight, by the by, is Jim DiEugenio, what was it, the debate against John McAdams? And
oh yeah,
oh
that was some big time stuff back then, right?
That was so I could not restrain myself from like,
yeah.
I worked the night shift and I had to come home in the morning to get the download. Like as soon as you put it out, I was sitting there going, "Come on, Lynn, come on, put it out." To actually get the episodes, because I think it was in two parts, right? Or was it three?
Yeah, no, two parts. And there was a week in between them, too. It was supposed to be 2 weeks in a row, and that didn't happen.
Right.
But it's probably even better that it didn't. Both sides had that time to regroup. And the McAdams people thought they won, and anybody listening to Jim DiEugenio thought he just embarrassed McAdams. But some people, they don't feel any embarrassment.
No, that's a remarkable thing. Even your back-and-forth battle with Francois and all that at one point there. There was this French lone nut theorist.
I had forgotten about him. Funny.
I told you I'm a fan of the show, I don't say things I don't mean on my show. So anyway, it's do you recall who it is that actually pointed me to you, and actually got me into it? It was so funny because I was not aware of you in the year 2000. Or in the very early years. I caught up on those later when I purchased the archives and was really thrilled and, got my introduction to Anita, who was already kind of gone by the time I got into it there. But it was rather interesting stuff. Even at one point, by the way, not saying that Len endorsed her or anything, but Judith Barry Baker was a guest on Black Op Radio at one point. It is there in your archives. Can't deny it.
No, I'll tell you that I wasn't a fan, but Anita was.
Right.
And Anita was just saying, look, let's have her on and let's listen. You know, because sometimes when you have somebody on and they explain how the world is flat, I don't want to say I have anybody on to embarrass them. I would rather not have a guest on than do that.
Right.
Okay. But in that case, there's been one or two people that I didn't agree with, but I had them on, and Judy Baker was one of them.
Right.
And when I had her on the interview, it wasn't as bad as down the road, because when I had her on, I think it was late at night. I don't know where she was, but it didn't sound all that coherent, and I don't know if it really went over well. But Anita was saying, well, look, at least like some people were endorsing her story, or just going along with it. And you know, I was on the fence. I've been on the fence about a lot of things, you know. Is that Oswald in the doorway or not, or whatever, you know? Did the car stop? Did the car stop? Or, did, you know, it's like, well, you know, I'm looking at the big picture. And, I mean, guys like Jim Fetzer say it stopped for 20 seconds and all these shots came in. And then they, you know, they cut that part out. It's like, okay, well, that's a debate. But, you know, talk about that later. But yeah. I did have the chance to meet Judy Baker. She was on a book tour, and she came right to my studio in Vancouver, and I sat across from her, like 3-4 feet across from her, for like an hour and a half. Mm-hmm. And I didn't air that. I never aired that. I just, about 10 minutes in, I go, I don't believe her. And I thought, this is like someone making up a story, and I just don't believe it. And it got so bad that I thought, this interview I'm not going to show. And by the way, the guy, Chris Milligan from mm-hmm. Trine Day Books, when I was talking to him before she was supposed to go on, I said, Chris, I mean, I really like talking to him. I said, come on, sit down for 10, 20 minutes. Let's talk. And we spoke for 45 minutes. And I put that on there. That's on YouTube. You can find that.
Yeah.
But yeah, the one with Judy Baker, I just didn't believe her. And I thought, I'm doing more harm by promoting something that I don't even believe in. So, for instance, when she was on early in the early days, she had contacted me once or twice while Fletcher was still alive, you know. And I just didn't know what to make of her. And, you know, there's a lot of stories. There's a lot of folklore in the assassination that I heard this. You can see the driver's got a handgun and that, you know, you can see the flash. And it's like, right. You know, to me, some of the stuff is folklore. And I think by me just interviewing people, I don't really have anybody on that I talk you into believing. I don't say, you know, like... I hear people have said bad things about Mark Lane, about Jonestown, and he has to be an agent. Let's talk to Mark Lane. Listen to what he has to say. Like, listen to Fletcher Prouty. If you don't agree with him, fine. Just listen to him. And that early interview with Judy Baker was one. Mm-hmm. And I think there was one show with me and Anita that we decided to ditch. And because that woman was just too unbelievable. And it was Anita's idea. Most of the time, I have researched something. I have read the book. Right. I watched the documentary. I'm very interested. And then I asked the guest on. But every now and then somebody, you know, he said, we got to have her on. We got to have this guy on. I said, okay, okay. And I wouldn't know too much about it. But that was the – it drew the line. And I forget her name right now. It's probably best that I forget her name.
Oh, yeah, because I already think I know who you're talking about, because she made the rounds and she was talking about she knew who the mystery man was in Mexico City, and it was somebody that was her friend something.
There was a famous disinform agent attacking Jim Garrison, and I forget his name, and it was his daughter. Mm. And she wrote a book about LSD and the water supplies and this and that and the other thing, and it was just, it started to go, wow, this is a bit out there. This is like X-Files material. Mm. This isn't, you know, if I don't believe it, I don't want to air it, right?
Right.
And there's only been two times that happened. And like I say, the first time that I spoke to Judy, it just, I didn't think it was damning or damaging. It was like, okay, well, if anybody wanted to hear what she said, here it is, right? But the second time she came to the studio, I just didn't believe it. I didn't air that one. And geez, I forget the woman's name.
It's okay. Beginning. You know what? Fair enough. And
yeah.
We don't have to go into some of the oddness that you
but
know.
Say
you
that,
might encounter,
saying that, I mean, there was over 1,080 shows that I have aired.
Right.
So there's a lot of people that people may have trouble with, but there's several people like Jim Douglas I've had on several times, and I'm really proud to have him on. I had him. He had six chapters in his book, six big ones, and I had him on an hour, six episodes, I think, in a row, just to talk about each chapter. That's how important it was.
Right.
And that was before his book really took off. So there's been a lot of people that have done research. I'm thinking about the RFK assassination. Lynn Mangan, she had a lot of research she did about that nobody knew about and hadn't heard of her. And of course, people have heard of like Lisa Pease or Jim DiEugenio or Cyril Weck. You know, when I have those people on, as soon as they have a book, they have anything out, I'm happy to talk about what is new.
Right.
And that's another thing that listeners may or may not know. You think, how do you keep a show going for 20 years? What are you going to talk about? But surprisingly, there are new things coming out. Like just this year with Oliver Stone's documentary, there's a new 4-hour documentary out. And you know, the good thing about that, it says, when I made my movie 30 years ago, this is what we knew, and now we know so much more.
Right.
So it's like it's like every stone hasn't been overturned. And
well, even in the minutia, even if you just look at Oliver Stone's original film and the questions surrounding that, Rose Sheremy, for instance, right? Michael Marcades, who is Rose's son, has written, you know, to my mind, an excellent book explaining that woman that, you know, a lot of the public might only be aware of in that original rush at the beginning of JFK, you know, which obviously other researchers have done work on, but he spent time, you know, examining his family's genealogy and her death and a lot of other things to really fill out the story there. And I think you've had Marcades on as well, right?
Yeah, a couple of times.
Yeah.
Right, because once for his book, and then there was, I think, an update to the book. Or whatever, but yeah, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And spoke about that. And of course, whenever there was a conference, you know, Lancer or John Judge's work, I would have people on to say, okay, well, this is what you can expect to hear, and here are some of the guests. And
right.
I think be kind of a focal point for people to tune in and know what's coming up. You know, this fall there's going to be a conference here, there's going to be a conference there. There's you know, there's things happening, and it's not like it's a real hub of activity, but there are a few people that are, you know, like a Malcolm Blunt, that people are still going through old records, reading them, putting them in perspective, and there's just new books and documentaries coming out all the time.
Right, right. And the thing is, I mean, I'm anxiously awaiting the 4-hour version of the JFK documentary by Oliver Stone, and the thing is, Oliver Stone is not somebody who I like endorse 100%. You know, some of his stuff, I question why he's doing it, you know, and, but he's also a tremendous artist. Anybody who says that he's not a great filmmaker, I don't know what your opinion of film is, you know, like what is film to you if you don't think this guy's a great filmmaker? But he's also been, you know, steadfast, regardless of the fact that I do believe it's cost him something, you know, when it comes to his prestige and his position and his ability to get funded to do some of the projects he wanted to do. You know, it's cost him in order to continue on with this. And even when you brought up Jim Douglas there, you know, a lot of people forget that, you know, not only the work of people examining that original release of that book, you know, and all of us trying to do it from a grassroots point of view, the thing that sort of turbocharged that is Oliver Stone handing that book to Bill Maher on Real Time, even though Bill Maher, you know, totally despises any conspiracy theory of any kind, right? He looked at it and just, you know, whatever, but simply because that book made an appearance on that TV show, it seemed to spark a huge amount of new interest. And the next thing you knew, Simon & Schuster published it, which it's a great book, JFK and the Unspeakable. I know that you certainly enjoyed it, and so did I. I actually called Jim up and complained to him, actually, Len, because I was having trouble reading the book, because, as you well know, I have a visual problem. So I was like, you know, Jim, this is a great book, but it's very hard to read. It's very unfriendly to somebody like me. And he said, okay, look, I'll get back to you on that. And some weeks later, he had commissioned the audiobook, actually, and had it made. And true story, he sent me a CD copy of it in the mail, and with a little note that said, you know, thanks for inspiring me to make sure this got created. Because he took his original Orbitz, copyright and commissioned the audiobook himself. Okay, because there was no audiobook for it. And I'm not saying I'm the solely responsible for that thing being there, but what I'm saying is that I probably played a little role because I was, well, I was whining about it because I'm like, I have a hard time reading.
Well, you
book.
Were the inspiration.
So it's a weird thing.
Well, you
thing.
Know, sometimes people don't think about that, and as soon as you tell them, yeah, do an audiobook.
Well, the funny thing is, I didn't even tell him to do it. I just said, I'm having a hard time reading this now because I had both the original Orbitz one and the Simon & Schuster, and I'm going, yeah, Simon & Schuster is using recycled paper, which is difficult visually for somebody like me. It's not very clear, the print. So I'm looking at that, and I'm looking at the original one, and I'm like, ah, you know, Jim, I love the book, but, you know, you got to help me here with something that I can read better. And really my whole goal was, you know, look, when you stop making money on your book, do me a favor and give it over to the Library of Congress, because they have a program there for blind people to get audiobooks for free, you understand. So I've always encouraged authors that I thought did good work to pass that along. Please, when you're done making money on your book, give it over to them and let some blind people also experience your book, right? It's a little known thing I do. And that was what I was, my goal was with Jim. And then he went and did that. And I thought it was great. And it was like, wow, I can't believe this happened. Anyway, look, enough of all that. I want to go back to the stuff that you've been able to preserve. Because again, lots of authors, lots of big names. Jesse Ventura's been on there. You know, Jesse is continuing to be a controversial individual. And he had that show Conspiracy Theory. And I remember when, you know, one of the episodes was disappeared, right, and all that. And you covered that stuff on Black Op Radio as well. So I'm just saying, there's a ton of things over there at Black Op Radio that if you go back in the archives, and like Glenn said, $10 for a year, not so bad to support the show. And as I said, I mean, I bought, I don't know if you remember, but I bought a couple of different T-shirts. I actually had one of the, I still have one of those confusatory T-shirts as well.
Oh, wow. Oh, that's great. You're probably the only one. But I have your picture up. Usually at Black Op Radio, there's a T-shirt section, and I've got your photo up there. With you. I ask people to mail in a photo once they get a shirt. So I've got a few people up there from all around the world, you know?
Yes.
Sweden, Japan, wherever, and wherever you were at, I've got your photo there. I'm almost positive it's there.
Yeah, I know it's there. As a matter of fact, I think it's been up there and put up there sideways because that's the way I sent it to you because I didn't know how to even take a picture back then with a phone. And I think I'm sideways on your website. So, yeah, that's me. But like I said, I've been a supporter of the show for a long time and a fan of it. So, how about this? Why don't you tell us about, and oh, there's some other stuff that you've done too. I just want to mention, the reading of Edwin Black's article, which I thought was great because I hadn't seen it since the days of Prevailing Winds, when they used to do those little mailers and you had to be on the Prevailing Winds mailing list, I think it was called. You know, and that was one of those things that had not been seen in a long time, originally published in the, what was it, the Chicago Monthly or something? Edwin Black's article, which was misrepresented by one author and then, you know, suggested to be a big part of somebody else's work. And of course, leads us into a discussion with Abraham Bolden. Oh, who, by the way, Len has also had as a guest. You know, it's just, it's amazing stuff that you've been able to put together over time. There is always something new, though, because new documentaries will be put out, and I'm sure you're aware that there's going to be some kind of stuff coming up for the 60th anniversary. Can you believe that? We're almost at the 60th anniversary of the event. I mean, it's only a year and a half away, Len. You ready for it?
Well, I went to Pittsburgh for the 50th, I believe. Mm. Right? And Cyril Weck put on a very, very good concert. A conference.
Yes.
And the 50th, I have mixed feelings about that because of the way the city of Dallas held their event, which was a clampdown. I mean, they really shut down any kind of remembrance of the assassination. I don't think you were allowed to wear t-shirts. You weren't allowed to mention the assassination. It was just supposed to be kind of somehow a celebration of his life on the day and the city where he was shot.
Yeah.
And they blocked off the thing. And I had John Judge on several times talking about his fights with the mayor and just the state of Texas when he had the moment of silence from Copa at the time, I guess. They changed the name, right?
Right.
And various people. So, yeah, whenever something was happening, I would try to have the people on to promote that thing. And actually, it kind of pissed me off enough that me and Jeff Carter produced a series called 50 Reasons for 50 Years. And as well as just doing Black Op Radio, that's something I'm actually proud of because it almost seems to be a model for documentaries after the fact. I mean, when you see the four-hour episode that Oliver did, there's a bit of similarity there that they tried to interview interview experts to talk about certain things, and that's what we did. I thought, you know, for short attention span people and the 50th anniversary, Gary Mack will be out there, you know, saying how Lee Oswald did it after all. Let's go through and make tops 5-minute episode about the parade route, about the gun, about the bullet, about the Tippit shooting, about just everything, so people can get a good idea that something's really rotten here.
Mm-hmm.
And we did that over a year, as well as putting out the Black Op Radio. I mean, which we don't make money on. It's not really any kind of income generator. I'm just lucky that I break even enough with my storage and things like that. So with Jeff Carter, you know, a couple of times he had emailed me, said, "Hey, do you want to do something, whatever?" And I'm usually shy of people saying, "Hey, I could like to come over and help you make something." And I was like, "Oh, really? You know, who are you working for?" Kind of thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
But he was in Vancouver, and it just happened that, you know, we connected and we said, "Okay, we'll narrate it." Since I already knew so many people doing it for so many years, I said, "Well, I can phone up Jesse Ventura and talk about the gun. I can phone up Cyril Wecht. I can," and then slowly we started it before the 50th year. We were starting shooting in September, so that we had to interview people and make kind of a timeline of, okay, well, let's start off with the history and who, you know, who was Lee Oswald and who was this and government agencies and, you know, would they actually assassinate people? And, you know, we kind of built up to the 50 different episodes, and Oliver Stone luckily was episode number 50.
Mm-hmm.
And really, I think it was well done, and I think because I presented my views in that, I'm, you know, more happier than that was, for instance, just saying Black Op Radio, because on Black Op Radio I will interview someone interesting and you can either agree or disagree with them, And sometimes people don't like Jim DiEugenio. You got that guy on again, whatever. And I write back, listen, he's down there in L.A. He's writing a script. He's doing this. Like, I want to hear what's going on. Who else is better, you know? Mm. So suggest somebody. But, you know, suggest somebody that I've heard of and I've read the guy's book. And with the 50 Reasons, though, that was, I think, between me and Jeff Carter, that was our personal view. So this is how crooked this whole thing is.
Right.
And I was a little bit, I think every time right before the camera rolled, I thought about Gary Mack and, you know, you son of a gun. And you're not going to get away with it. I'm not only am I going to continue 52 episodes of Black Op Radio, but here comes another. Well, we had an introduction episode, and I think, I don't know if we had epilogue or what we had, but anyways, you know, close enough, 52 weeks in a year. And I'm very happy that I think that made a difference. And anybody who does come to the case, they go, well, you know, what about this or what about that? Here's a quick 5-minute synopsis of that item. And then if you look further into it, there's lots. I mean, I think we would promote someone's book, like a Doug Horne or somebody else on to talk about, you know, where there's more information on the topic. And, you know, I couldn't have made it without Jeff Carter. And you know, the same thing, he probably couldn't have made it without me. We just fit hand in glove together between filming and editing and knowing the topic. And two people just put that out, you know. And, I mean, of course, it's not as professional as something that Oliver Stone does and, you know, really good cameramen, directors of photography and everything. But just compared to the sixth floor ad nauseum, I used to call them the sixth floor museum, and Gary Mack and the lies of them. It's one thing to say, I wonder what happened to the dinosaurs. How did they die? Well, we think a meteor hit. We think, you know, something, whatever, you know. But right. It's another thing to keep harping on about Lee Oswald, a lone gunman, killed Kennedy.
Right.
And that's kind of what irked me. Where is after that, Redux. That was Jeff's idea. But anyway, I think in 2018, it was the 50th anniversary of Martin Luther King and Bobby Kennedy. And we did a much smaller endeavor. We did, I think, 4 episodes for Bobby and 4 for Martin. Yeah. And then a fifth that culminated to, you know, just talk about the end of the 60s and other things. So we did 9 episodes that are an addendum, which are also under the heading of 50 Reasons for 50 Years, addendum. Right. I think Redux is how Jeff labeled them, but they're very similar.
Yeah, and all that stuff is still available on YouTube, right? I mean,
yeah, they're all there. Yeah. As a matter of fact, I'm getting a little worried about YouTube and the censorship and everything. I've been thinking I should maybe transfer them all over to Rumble. Did you know one episode 45 was pulled? And it had Oliver Stone on it, on the original one. Hmm. And it was down for 2 or 3 years. And then Jeff had copied that and put it onto Vimeo or something else. And then one day it just appeared again back on YouTube. It's very strange.
I have had similar problems. You know what I would suggest to you, Len, is if you get time or you get the facilities to do so, just copy it to as many platforms as you can. Because honestly, I don't know what's going on with YouTube either. I've gotten weird things that have happened. Apparently, I was cyberbullying Jeffrey Epstein for talking about the case after he was dead. So I was cyberbullying Jeffrey Epstein. I'm not kidding. Reporting news on my YouTube transfers of this radio show, talking about, you know, just what went on in you know, January 6th. Trying to just report the news, mind you. I was somehow encouraging violence. I have gotten weird things. And the weirdest one, indeed, was presenting a couple of statements that JFK had made. And I just used the recordings. One of them was a dictation recording where he's literally reading into a dictaphone and, you know, stop and period and comma and all that. And it's a statement about Vietnam, and then playing one of his publicly made statements and putting up a graphic that effectively said, don't these two things contradict one another, asking a question in a 5-minute video, right? And that had been up on YouTube for 8 years, and just this year they took it down, and the complaint was that I was promoting self-harm. I do not understand, Len, what they're doing over there.
I think I've seen a meme of a guy punching himself in the face, right?
Yeah.
So how can you promote self-harm by talking about the JFK assassination?
I have the same... Yeah. I also want to know, how do you cyberbully a dead man? But I asked these questions, and I was told that my appeal was rejected by asking these questions. So
yeah, if it was ever looked at.
Right. So... Yeah, if I'm you, even though it's still available on YouTube and it is the most widely accessed, you know, video platform out there, I suggest, yeah, put it everywhere you can, please, because this thing needs to survive. People need to have access to it. The 50 Reasons series is absolutely wonderful. Do I agree with every single thing in it? No. But I will tell you that it is definitely provocative. It evokes a great deal of thought.
I just have a question for you. Yeah. What did you like about it? And then I was going to ask, what didn't you like?
I'm
just genuinely interested.
Okay, off the top of my head, because remember, I haven't watched it for a little bit, but off the top of my head.
No problem, and I haven't either.
you know, I am not a fan. I am a fan of some of John Armstrong's research.
Okay, no problem.
But his conclusions and where he takes that and some of the things that he gleans from that research, I do not find valuable. That's just
no problem.
My opinion of John Armstrong.
There would be an episode on John Armstrong where he would be talking about, I think, an Oswald double impersonator. And by the way, mm-hmm. let me say that I share that, Bob. The thing that I didn't throw the baby out with the bathwater is that every time I think of John talking about Harvey and Lee, I think of an imposter. I think of a lookalike. I think somebody who set up to confuse the issue. So I don't go back to the grade school and the two people that he does.
Right.
But when they say that there was a guy sitting in a car, you know, and what's his name? Wes Wise, whatever, sees the guy there and he says, that's that guy. I took the license plate number down and he was out of the back alley sitting there at this car lot.
Right.
And that's the guy they arrested on TV. You go, well, there was something's up. There's either an impersonator or what. So, I'm happy. And, yeah, there's things that I don't agree with John. But right. I probably have John on once a year with the caveat. I say John is pretty open to say, hey, if I'm wrong, someone write in. You can write to John. I mean, I've got an email form in that, and, right. and people have. And if you don't agree with him, you know, he doesn't seem to be tied to one thing. But his book is so in-depth. I mean, it's Harvey and Lee, and it really makes the case that... You see, I look at it another way. When you see these mole hunts, mm-hmm. I think that they put false information down about people. So if a Soviet mole was going through there, they were trying to figure out, where did this guy come from? Where did he take his training? Is he really a defector? Or did he, you know, is he a military man? And they have these different trails that would leave anyone to become confused. And if a well-meaning researcher, say, for instance, like in this case, we'll just say, for instance, John Armstrong, mm-hmm. comes across all these different two sets of records that seem to conflict, the guy's in school here, the guy's in school there, he's in another city, you know, it doesn't make sense. You know, someone can read his book and subscribe to that. Mm-hmm. But, I don't think that the episode he was on, we pushed it that hard. We just wanted to say that there was somebody buying trucks in the name of Lee Oswald. Somebody had tried to test right. drive a car in the name of Lee. Other people, you know, there's the thing right there. Did Lee even have a driver's license, right? So,
well, right.
If he didn't, and then somebody else is driving, mm-hmm. Assuming the personality of Lee Oswald or... Alec Heidel or all the different things, then you come to this intrigue where you go, well, something's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a fair enough. That I appreciate a criticism. You're saying you didn't like the episode with John Armstrong because going down that path may be detrimental to the true research of the case.
Right.
And
we'll see what I will, know, what
I will
say.
I would say that was just a criticism. Fair.
Yeah.
You know, well, what do I do? I did like that I do believe somebody was impersonating him. I believe somebody you know, just talk about the upper balcony. Somebody's in the balcony, somebody's in the lower balcony. One guy's escorted out the back of the Texas Theater. You know, it's just, there's, you know, yeah, there's something the strange. Yeah.
No, during the arrest, there's certainly some questions here.
And
you know what? The very valid part of what John did is prove without a shadow of a doubt, in my opinion, that there is an intentional convoluting of the record regarding Oswald. And people would say, okay, you're nuts. You know what they did with this guy. All right. Let's back up a second. I found this over and over again, not just in the JFK case, okay, but in other areas of research where, quite frankly, you know what? Files disappear. Files reappear. Files are clearly fictitionally created. I found this, and I pointed this out recently, and people are like a little shocked, but I investigated my own father's death and found that the U.S. military, first of all, disappeared his military record for a certain amount of time, and I could not figure out why. And he did not die in the military. He died as a result of a suicide, which I had to reconfirm because I was not satisfied with the investigation. And it took me many years to just confirm that. My father is nobody to anybody except me, you know, and perhaps my half-sister. But outside of that, nobody would care about him. Yet they disappeared his military record, and when it did reappear, it contains falsehoods. And it did not reappear until 2007. When I first went looking for it in 1991, it was non-existent. So, you know, we have an interesting thing here where you can find over and over again that the official records are not necessarily so rock solid as people want to claim they are. Okay, in all sorts of instances, Len, and I know that's a personal thing and it sounds, you know, a little silly, but again, I find this repeatedly where the record is convoluted. And we could go to the George H.W. Bush thing, right, where, you know, people made ask the question about him being in the CIA in the 1960s. Was he actually, was he just, you know, suddenly appointed you know, leader by Gerald Ford? Was he suddenly appointed the head of the CIA in 76 for 1 year and that's it? Or is there a greater history? And what did we get when those questions were answered? Well, there was another George Bush. You know, okay, fair. There was another George Bush, but there's no reason to confuse these two guys. And anyway, I'm just saying that intentionally, it appears to me, there is a frustration put in place for people that would turn around and try and utilize their own records force them to explain certain things. And this has been on a personal level for me, but also in the realm of political research. This is something that happens. And I think John shows that there is an intentional, because this could not be accidental, what goes on here, where you have multiple sets of records that cannot be reconciled to one human being. Okay?
And if anybody listening didn't pick that up, what John has done is he has made a conclusion about what these two sets or more sets of contradicting evidence means. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's a fair enough criticism. But saying that, then, tell me something that you did like about the series.
Just about everything else.
Okay. So maybe a guest or two. Well, you know, there was. I don't think we doubled anybody, did we? So I think there was probably 50, you know, 50 or 49 different guests. Oh, I think I was on once or twice when we didn't have a satisfactory spokesman for the topic.
Right.
And I forget what that would be right now, but there would be on. You know, various things.
Well, I think
the only the only anecdote I have is that I actually, when I asked Oliver Stone if he would take part in it, it didn't get back to me for a long time. And at that time, I had already planned, okay, well, if he's not gonna, we better plan number 50. And I had John Judge as number 50,
right,
and did that episode. And then about 3 weeks before, I got an email from Oliver saying, "Hey, I've been watching this, and I like what you're doing." You know, he said, "Sure, I'll take part."
Right.
So we scrapped that episode, and we had the final episode 50, Dave Radcliffe and Oliver Stone, and I think a little intro for myself. And then, luckily, I had that episode doing nothing for years, and on my 1,000th episode, I thought this would be great. I kind of did a summing up of all the 1,000 shows so far, and I put that episode of John Judge on there. I thought that was a good place. John had passed away already,
right.
And here's something that nobody had heard, and it's only about a 5-8 minute segment summing up the case, but that was pretty good.
No, absolutely. And look, I mean, a lot of the stellar, I would call them the staple presenters, have also been on Black Op Radio and involved in your projects, you know, ranging from Robert Groden to John Judge, you know, Deborah Conway. Of course, Larry Hancock, a friend of mine, has been on your show several times.
Her sister, Sherry Feaster.
Sherry Feaster, the late Sherry Feaster, incredible piece of work. You know, her one book on the case is really, really one of these things that I point to often.
If you don't mind, I'd like to mention this also. It isn't that, like, some people, they don't like John Armstrong or they don't like Robert Groden. There's a bit of animosity. And even there's an animosity at the time between Deborah Conway and John Judge. The John Judge had COPA and Deborah had Lancer.
Right.
Sorry. And so, you know, they were kind of competing conferences, you know. And so the people that were on there, it wasn't just there's some, when people say they subscribe to a point of view in the research that, you know, this is true or it isn't true, there's I don't know, it's not rivalry, but it's you know, it's not one happy camp, and everybody doesn't agree, and that's kind of one of the problems too, right? So at least at arm's length, if I interview someone, I don't bring up who else I'm interviewing. But there are a few, like I mentioned, a few people hit right in to complain about a guest, and I just, you know, try to say, you know, if you have a complaint, write to him and ask him to explain the chapter in his book or anything, you know. I don't want to do that. I don't know if that happens to you as well, but it's just you know, I had an interest in this case, and I tried to interview people, and I still do. And at once a week, it's just enough that I can handle it.
No, I understand. And look, I've had to scatter it because I do this show, and it's not a JFK show at all. But I bring it up often because it's one of those things that I am constantly interested in. So I've done over 2,000 episodes of this show. But then again, I'm doing 5 days a week versus your one. So it's easier for me to get to 2,000, right, in a shorter amount of time. And a couple hundred of them have been, centered on the JFK case. And I've tried to be selective about it, and I've tried to be as responsible as I can be. And I've even invited, you know, people that are lone nut theorists onto this show. You know, in order to, well, let's look at what it is you have. You know, let's look at anything anybody's got that is legitimate evidence so we can get toward, you know, a solution. And I've been like that. Now, as far as the, you know, in quotes, research community, the battles are endless. The grudges are endless. The back and forth is endless. And even though I've been in proximity to a lot of these guys for a lot of years, gotta tell you, I am aware that I don't belong anywhere personally. Right? I've got my friends for sure. You know, one guy who's been on your show has been one of my longer standing friends in the community is Walt Brown. But again, this is about proximity, because even though I do recall, and I think it was Judy might have even said on your show, there's just this one guy in New York that doesn't believe me. The person she was referring to was me. But I wasn't from New York. I was from New Jersey. Thanks. And although I did live in New York temporarily, that would not be where you'd say I'm from. But there was the New Jersey contingent of people, which, you know, I was comfortable with. Like I say, Walt and Joan Mellon and, you know, Stu Wexler and people like this, right? And at an earlier time, I worked with some other names I don't even want to mention, because they pick their own fights in the community, and I don't need to resurrect them, especially if they're no longer among us, Len.
Well, the only guy I don't mind talking about is Gary Mack. I think that he was 100% disingenuous with his presentation of the facts.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you've studied his career for 20 years, being interested in the case, investigative in the case, and then gets the, according to Robert Groden, $200,000 a year plus job there where he had to promote the lone gunman. Right. And he just said, yeah, okay, sure, I'll do that. And yeah. That doesn't get us any closer to anything, you know?
Well, and now, simultaneously, and here's where I don't make myself any friends. I will tell you that in trying to interact with Gary Mack, I knew him from a distance as somebody who was a conspiracy advocate. From the days when he was working with Jack White and all that, I was not deeply in the community yet. By the time I got there, I think he had already turned. And quite frankly, when I interacted with him, the guy was never rude to me or anything or nasty to me. A matter of fact, he was fairly cooperative when I was trying to collect together, you know, say the tenants of the Dow Techs building, which, by the way, nobody's ever made a complete list of who should have been occupying that building at that time. Okay. And that was something that I was working on. Again, a lot of stuff that nobody ever hears about that I hand to somebody else because they need it for their book. Right. So I was trying to work on that, and I went to Gary Mack at one point and said, you know, what do you guys have? Okay.
Well, I have heard that, and it's the same thing. I've heard some people say that they were friends with Harold Weisberg. Another guy say, oh, that gold curmudgeon, right? You know, I'll have to get into that. But some people,
yeah,
they hit it off, and other people they don't. And I did not have that friendship or anything with Gary Mack. He was nothing but insulting, mm-hmm, and condescending, and I have made that a little thing, be careful who you make enemies of. So if somebody phones or writes, I mean, to complain about a guest or the show or something like that, I just smile and go, I don't need to pick a battle, because
right.
There's this old saying, the fire you light under your enemy usually burns yourself.
Yeah.
And Gary certainly started. He's practically responsible for 50 Reasons for 50 years because of some emails and things he'd sent to me and just try to undermine things. And so I was so mad at Gary.
Right.
That's why I did 50 Reasons for 50 years.
No, and I was equally enraged by a lot of the actions the guy took, you know, that I knew undermined other people's efforts. But I'm just saying, on a personal level, I didn't have that problem with him. I'll tell you another weird thing. John McAdams, okay, a long time ago, and I stopped participating in those forums a long time ago, Len. I used to actually post in the Black Op Radio forum when you had that. I don't know if it's still there. But I stopped doing all of it a long time ago, and yours was like the last one that I was going to touch. But back in those days when I was on a forum that McAdams was running, the guy actually defended me. And was fairly kind in private conversation to me, you know, back and forth in emails, you know, pretty much saying that I was one of those guys who was not on his side, but seemed to have my head screwed on right and wasn't deserving of being, like, you know, bashed by other people. So I know that's totally weird and out of character, because we learned a few things about McAdams there. Maybe he wasn't the most gentlemanly gentleman out there. But again, you know, wasn't
well, I guess that's any research community, no matter what. In this case, we're talking about, you know, 60s history, JFK or Bobby Kennedy or Martin Luther King. The research community, their people are doing what they can to read and learn and then forming an opinion. And then you get on these groups and somebody will disagree with it. And before you know it, you got a full-blown flame war going.
Mm-hmm.
So... yeah, I don't have the forum up anymore at Black Op Radio, and it was up for once. There was a moderator for it. Somebody would, you know, keep other people from putting ads up or yeah, just whatever in there, right? You know,
right.
And then some of those things just take too much time, right?
Oh, listen, so, the forums on my website lasted about a week. So yeah. Now I'll finally answer that trivia question I asked you way earlier to see if you could remember, which was the odd, ironic person who actually pointed me to Black Op Radio in the first place. Did you conjure that?
No. Oh, sorry, okay. I didn't.
Ready for this? Here's a name that's going to ring a bell in Len's ear really fast. Ready? Okay. All right. David Von Pine.
Oh, really? No, that's great. I'm smiling when I say I haven't heard of him in a long time. And it was good. There's another guy that he seems to have an interest.
Yeah.
But I just do not agree with any of his conclusions. And
it's madness. Sure it's madness what goes on with that guy. And he's got in all due respect, he has a great video archive on YouTube. His channels contain so much historical stuff related to the assassination. I got to tell you, I don't know how he's got that collection of stuff that he's put up there. I mean, and I know you've seen the channels. That book, I'm very glad, flopped. But it was so funny because he got somehow in my email chain with all these other people and started sending me this stuff. I forget what he called it. It was like this long written tirade against you and Eugenio. Like the first few times, I guess Jim was on, saying like, "Oh well, this is how you battle conspiracy kooks or what." Like he somehow took me as not one of the conspiracy guys in the chain of emails here, which is weird because I am fairly abrasive when it comes to my criticism of poorly based evidence. Okay, Len, I don't expect you to share any of my opinions. I'm just saying that. I'm one of these guys who has looked at more than one author right to their face and said, "Your book's garbage." I mean, it just is. There is nothing being accomplished here, and I'm sick of this already because I've read hundreds of books, and I'm tired of wasting my time. Go back and do it better if you want to. You want to hear from me. And I don't write book reviews. I don't do any of that, but I've literally done that to people's faces because they are wasting our time and a treat. And that's my opinion. Again, Len, a little more open-minded maybe, and not going to sit there and trash somebody directly. Could be because you're Canadian. I don't know. But I'm an abrasive SOB from the Northeast. That's the way it is, Len. Sorry. Okay. But the fact
it's how much time do you have too, right? Because
yeah.
It's like battling at windmills, right? You know, like these guys who keep saying, "It's a lone assassin. It's Lee Oswald." I mean, you can. They have an endless supply of hot air, you know. Right. I just don't have time for it, you know. And if somebody had something mediocre, I don't have to exactly agree. I would entertain having that person on as a guest to talk about their book or whatever. But if I really object to it, I just don't have the guy on.
Right. No, look, but mediocre is okay, but at least have something to say. You know, for years, the book was, here's what happened in Dealey Plaza, according to the official. Here's what happened according to the way I see it. Now here's my theory, and here comes the big, you know. And it's usually nothing. I mean, I got to be honest with you. There's certain people that have written these books that are just these very long sort of, prose that are just not useful. You're not giving any information. And when they do that, it's like, just why did you do this? You have just added to the static. And I try and avoid having those people on too. Exactly the same thing. Unless their work has some value, I don't try and bring them forward because you can build a house out of books, one copy of each at a time, and live in it of stuff that gets you nowhere. Okay, when it comes to this case, and sadly, you know, some of it is of the, well, we think the mafia guy did it because of somebody's girlfriend, and I got a headache. You know what I mean? But either way, Len, again, blackopradio.com is the best place to go, says me, anyway, in order to keep up with what's going on in the JFK research community, new books. Len has had the best guests on. I did talk about a couple of the ones that I maybe didn't like so much, but honestly, that is a small fraction compared to the over 1,000 shows that you've done. And frankly, you're a little modest You got a hell of an archive, and frankly, if you're going to go and make an investment, I would purchase that bundle he's got over there still, because it's not that expensive to get. It's like how many years? 10, 15 years of shows?
No, I think I bundled them all. If you get them all, it's like $80.
Oh, okay.
So you get like 20 years worth, right?
I'm going to have to.
If you get them one at a time, it's $10 a year.
Listen, next time I got $80, I'm going to buy the archive again, because I've already bought it like twice, three times. I want you to know. But, you know, somebody steals it. Somebody steals it. I lost one. I'm going to buy another one. And if I can get the whole thing for $80, well worth it, guys. An incredible amount of resources just contained within. And it's just, you're not going to find it all in one place like this anywhere else, especially if you're interested in the Kennedy assassination. But there's other things there, as I mentioned. Interviews with Doug Ballantyne, stuff with Fletcher Prouty that might not have to do with the assassination directly. Some of it might be about, you know, different operations, the behaviors of different government institutions, the misbehaviors, other assassination plots, MLK, RFK, all of it's in there. Jamie
I'll
Scott
tell you
Ender.
One guest I'm really proud of finding, because it took me about 4 or 5 years to finally track him down.
Sure.
Lawrence Singer. Mm. He was the author for The Parallax View. And if you like that film,
nice.
I was able to track down the author and interview him, and that's on the archives too, and that's a real coup.
Yeah, and honestly, an incredible amount of stuff. I'll never be able to catch up, even if I keep doing this 5 days a week, and I wanted to dedicate myself to JFK stuff all the time, which I'm not going to do. But even if I did, I don't think I'll ever catch up to what Len Osadnik has done. So thanks, Len, for joining me for this entire hour, and we actually ran over a little bit, but appreciate you. And blackopradio.com, go over there. The last 2 years, this year and last year, you can listen to right now for free, and do that.
But yeah, they're on any podcast. You can search by a podcast.
Oh yeah, no, they're out there all different ways, but you can go straight to the website and just listen to them or download them like I do. It is really great stuff, and I absolutely endorse it. So Len, again, thanks so much.
Thank you very much, Chuck. And we'll speak again soon.
I hope so. Stick around the next hour. Ruckus will be among us on the Ocelli Effect. We'll be right back.
In Denial, Secret Wars with Airstrikes and Tanks by Larry Hancock. Secret Wars became a staple of U.S. covert operations and are still happening today. Larry Hancock's book, In Denial, rips the cover off many of them. Using new files, it exposes things about the Bay of Pigs that no one has ever written about before. It shows why it really failed and why the United States did not learn from it. Secret Wars became a staple of U.S. covert operations and are still happening today. It also shows why other countries today are doing secret operations with more success. This is the book that puts what some want to deny into the light. In Denial, Secret Wars with Airstrikes and Tanks. Larry Hancock. For more information, go to larry-hancock.com. Pick up your copy of In Denial at amazon.com in digital or physical form.
Revelation through conversation.
Go ahead, caller.
Hey, I'm interested in the truth about the JFK assassination.
Right. Well, what do you want to know?
Judy Baker's wild claim, Oswald girlfriend, he knew Ruby and Barry, cancer weapons. Really?
I imagine I could claim I have four wheels. It doesn't make me a wagon, but okay.
Oswald was on the kill team and trying to prevent the murder of John Kennedy. Come on now. Has it real? Eckert on the JFK assassination, book into her claims.
Go to Amazon.com, enter Judith Baker in her own words. You'll get results for a digital copy of a book where Walt Brown utilizes her own words and the known evidence in the case to get at, well, a different perspective, let's say. You can get Judith Barry Baker in her own words from the author himself, signed if you request it, by contacting Dr. Brown at KIASJFK@AOL.com. It's a fun book, and it actually dissects the many, many fantastic claims. Judith Barry Baker in her own words.
Thank you for all the great information.
This is James Corbett of CorbettReport.com, and you're listening to The Ocelli Effect at Ocelli.com. Do you like history? Real history that you were never taught in schools? Why? The Vietnam War, Nuclear Bombs and Nation Building in Southeast Asia, by author Mike Swanson, with new documentation never seen before that'll open your eyes to events that led up to this. Why? The Vietnam War, Nuclear Bombs and Nation Building in Southeast Asia, 1945 through 1961. Get your copy today at Amazon.com. Why? The Vietnam War, by author Mike Swanson.
Uncle, do you remember that time when Nibiru, also known as Planet X, was going to get within the gravitational pull of the Earth and cause mass commotion and chaos?
More that. More commotion. More confusion. It goes into the confusion thing. Hey, going nut, he's going back, and it's going crazy.
I hate being confused like that.
But that's exactly how he wants it.
It is, but at the Ocelli.com radio network, you're never confused.
No, it's straight to the point.
Straight talk.
And I like that idea.
It's about time. Forget this Nibiru stuff and listen to the Ocelli.com radio network.
.com, and he'd get it right where you want to hear it at. Right straight ahead, instead of ding-donging back and forth here.
Ocelli.com.
Revelation through conversation.
Ocelli.com.
Second hour of the Ocelli Effect continues now at Ocelli.com. But again, you could be some other time, some other place, and all that good stuff. Welcome. Anyway, in this hour, Len Osanek in the first hour from Black Op Radio. Thanks to Len once again. But in this hour, we got Ruckus Among Us. And why do I say that? Because he's the host of The Daily Ruckus over on Alternate Current Radio. AlternateCurrentRadio.com just got a facelift over there. Quite an interesting looking website. Well done, actually. Hesher did a good job. Solid job. Way better job than I can do. putting together that website. It looks nice, I gotta say. Don't know exactly what's going on with the Daily Ruckus lately, but I will say that there was a handful of listeners that said, you gotta get Ruckus on your show. And I wanted to get you on the show, dude, quite a bit. But thing is, I just, you know, was like, I'm always, something else is going on, and I don't know when you're available, and I don't use Discord. And thing is, I meant to, and I invited you a couple of times, but I don't know. There was some call lately. I don't know what you've been doing over there, but apparently some people heard something and said, I got to talk to Ruckus. So I said, okay. And as per usual, no script or anything. So I guess we'll just start. How you doing, man?
Hey, how's it going, Chuck? Hello, listeners out there in a chilly effect land. Thank you so much for here I am by special request, apparently. But everything you said there in the opening there, introduction, all true. And a lot of those things are actually might be related. The beautiful website with the gorgeous facelift, how did that happen? Well, Hesher had a little bit of help and a secret weapon. I kind of helped them with that. sat down, busted out my tools, and we got the design going. And then me and Hesher sat down and fine-tuned that. And then between me, Hesher, and a bunch of great people out there who you all know who you are, have been adding all the content and backfilling it. So it was certainly a team effort. And a very busy one which has actually been keeping me so busy I've been unable to do my show, The Daily Ruckus. So that's one of the reasons why I've been AFK, as they say, I guess, or AFR in this case, away from radio. Just been busy. And then, of course, you know, we saw a magical thing happen towards the end of last year and the beginning of this year. The C word magically vanished. So I was happy to see that, but it did mean that my work life, because I work a full-time job, folks, increased, and that was keeping me a little too busy too. So now that we got the website knocked out of the way, now that I got my work life figured out, the return of the Daily Ruckus is coming imminently, sometime in the next 2 weeks. I don't have a specific date because I don't want to jinx it yet, and all of that. So in the meantime, I've been making the rounds, actually. So one of these few things, one of these announcements or happenings may be the reason that your listeners requested me. They may have heard, well, what the heck? Ruckus was just on this guy's podcast. And then, oh, my gosh, he was over there on this guy's podcast. Well, we got to get him over there on Chuck's show then. That's what I'm thinking.
You know what? You're probably right. You're probably right because you're just popular out there. Let's talk to Ruckus. You know, I almost want to say no relation when it comes up because I love cartoons, dude. And Boondocks, I got to tell you, Uncle Ruckus is one of my favorite characters in animation history. you know, I'm not saying that it's related to you in any way, shape, or form. I'm just saying that I hear Ruckus, I think Uncle Ruckus. So nothing wrong with that, though. I would not mind being compared to him or in the same boat, same league, same linguistic whatever. Look, there's that, and it is good to examine this stuff. However, you did say something about the C word disappearing, and I don't think it's the one that only really, really, really offends the ladies in this country anyway, because, you know, they throw that word around a lot in the UK, and it's not specific in gender in any way. they throw that one C word around over there a lot, and that's not the C word we're talking about. The C word we are talking about, however, I gotta say, I am beginning to suspect will rear its ugly head again, because I think people are gonna grow exhausted from no action and nothing really more to report except atrocity in Ukraine. So I heard stirrings already just before air, because I'm always listening to different audio feeds. Get ready, there's going to be another surge. And what is it this time? Omicron, something or other, additional variant, blah, blah, blah. I don't know. I nodded off. Here we go again. I think it may actually come back around, and I'm not sure what the tolerance level is among, you know, common folks like us. I don't know if we're going to put up with it again or how that's going to play out, but they got to find more than just Russia to blame the economy crashing on, because it ain't working. Nobody is that stupid to think that all this inflation came up because this happened 2 weeks ago, even though the inflation started crushing us many months ago. What are your thoughts there, Ruckus?
And, well, you know, and I might add that it stems from a problem that goes back years, if not longer. So, yeah, they just keep sweeping this one under the rug and passing the buck, kicking the can down the road, and I'm just here, like, gritting my teeth, waiting for it to actually hit us really, really hard. And arguably, it has been hitting people rather hard, the supply chain and inflation issues and whatnot. The food costs are through the roof. I mean, the inflation here in the United States, these numbers are unfathomable. It's absolutely insane what they've been talking about as far as the economy is concerned. And I'm just like, these folks like to use this word about sustainability and call me crazy. I'm no economist, but it sounds to me like what we're doing with our money and our economy is not, quote unquote, sustainable. Leo, smug, you know, meme insert here. But I don't know. Like, I assume or presume that the reason the C word disappeared temporarily from the mainstream narrative is they have a new talking point, which you just brought up. And I think we're not going to talk too much about that this evening. We don't have to, because you just have to turn on your TV or the radio, other than to the Achille effect right now, and you're going to hear all about it. So, you know, we're all well aware of all of that and what that brings. Yeah, I didn't believe it for a second that the C word really disappeared. I tend to agree with you that it's going to rear its ugly head again in a different form. Maybe they'll keep doing the variant thing, but I think the next big thing that's going to, you know, invoke the type of responses that we saw during the C word would be a different word. So it'll be a whole new virus. The same folks that sat around and wargamed the coronavirus epidemic before that happened at Event 201 recently put out like a report about something called SPARS, SPARS, and full on report about this, and it looked and felt to me like the same way they played out the other situation. So I was like, okay, yeah. So if something comes out next, it'll look a lot like this thing. It'll probably be exactly this thing, and it'll be probably called SPARS. And, you know, what did we do last time? It was COVID-19. So the co part was for coronavirus, right? And the vid is for the viral disease. So that's how they got this word put together. So if SPARS is the virus, what would they call it if everybody got sick? So what are we going to be running around? We don't have COVID-19 anymore. We'll have SOVID-22.
Ooh.
Or something like that. They'll come up with some scare, or Spovey.
See, I had
it. It'll have a nickname. Watch.
No, I got you. And I'm wondering what the nickname will be. And I'm not sure that you're right, but I'm not going to say you're wrong. And I had half a dollar on monkeypox because, you know, monkeypox was something that they were talking about beginning of last year. This might be a thing, you know, but then again, Zika didn't work out. Although, if you look at the bottom of the possible things you can get from the vaccination, there is some Zika-related issue that you can actually get all the way. You know, they did it alphabetically. I don't know if you've seen that document yet, where it was apparently not meant to see the light of day from Pfizer, but it did. And this... huge, like 3 pages long, single spaced, all these possible things that you can get from having the injection. yeah, one of them is Zika related at the bottom. I was like, wow. It starts out with numerical things and then goes A, B, C, D, and all the way through. And perhaps I'll actually have a friend on to read from that document this week just to get it into people's heads that this came out. But anyway, yeah,
that's
what
great,
will be
you
the
could
next
you should have them read it the way that they do all of the pharmaceutical commercials on TV, where it's like side effects may include, and then he could just run right through the list.
Oh, I love those, by the way. I gotta tell you, that's I wait for those. I actually enjoy commercials when those are on, because it's like no matter what the product is. I remember years ago with the whole, you know, like here's something that'll clear up your pimples, and. Like suicide was a possible side effect from a pimple thing. Like it was like, we're going to clear up your skin. And by the way, that suicidal ideation may also, I was like, what? You know, your risks may include all of these things, heart palpitations, you know, this and that. And the third thing, you know, bleeding from the orifices and death, you know, just really quickly. And it's always nice, by the way, when it's a nice, pleasant, feminine voice that reads it off to you. You know, delivering bad news softly. right? I mean, it's like, oof. I don't know. I can deal with that a lot better than the... see, I'm in Georgia, so I'm getting slammed right now with this Raphael Warnock ad everywhere I go online. I don't know if you've seen that, but I don't know, man. I mean, we're going to hit political ad season soon. That's coming up. We know that for certain because the midterms, right? They're only a few months away now. What, 7 months away? We're 6 months away. Midterms, right?
Ooh, this might be one of the reasons that, you know, things have to roll back here so we can make a great big politics game of it.
There you go.
You know, we can have the right side saying, the left stole your freedom from you during the pandemic and forced you to shut your businesses down and forced your kids to wear masks. We need to make sure that never happens again. And then right. While they're in power, that exactly will happen again.
Well, because...
crazy.
Yeah. Let's not forget that it started happening while the right was in power. Okay, mm-hmm. Just saying. All these things were kind of...
They'll use it as a talking point as if they would never and they didn't. And, you know, anyone that tries to bring that up will be immediately... their character will be assassinated or have their Facebook banned or something. Who knows?
Sure. Why not? And that's yet another thing going on. We have the comparison of the oppression of the state shutting you down about what it is you're allowed to discuss and not, and also the other state, the corporate state, which does this to us simultaneously. So, you know, on all sides, it's like, hey, look, I'm not coming to harm you. I'm from the government. I'm here to help, which immediately clamps my orifices closed, because I got to tell you, I'm waiting for the invasion. And it ain't about Ukraine. You know what I'm saying? This is, I'm using interesting language here as best I can. But no, I think that this is going to be the play too, that we're going to see. Look, we're here as the opposition. We're clearly for your freedom when they're not. They're just here to tell you what your freedoms are because they think they know better one way or the other, either side of the paradigm, pick one. And that's the way I see it. But, you know, I'm one of these crazy conspiracy theorists, so what do I know? right? You know, and the funny thing is that I don't even know how you sell Joe Biden at this point or Kamala at this point as, you know, being what? Are they going to actually go ahead and undermine candidates because no popularity there? Okay, zero. People say, oh, it's very important how he handled the corona pandemic. And it's like, well, he didn't. And neither did anybody else. Because quite frankly, I don't know what to make of it all. But I will say, I'm not one of these people that says there's no disease whatsoever. But is it something that was overplayed on all sides? And oh, by the way, if you check the records, didn't all these guys, I mean, on both sides of the alleged aisle, also gain a lot during this time? Just like all of our billionaires having increased their budgets and all that good stuff. Oh, and by the by, this whole thing with the gas companies and being forced to charge more at the pumps because of the price of oil, you know, it's funny because record profits they're making. Record profits, right? And even in the mainstream media, they're starting to go, yeah, something's not right here with this huge price increase that is going to affect everything else because transportation is a major issue with any commodity or any produce or anything anywhere. So
would it be a conspiracy theory to suggest that these people who run these businesses who are desperately trying to add money to their bottom line after coming out of their worst, you know, financial 2 years of their lives as a company might want to take advantage of this hot news and this hot war and this idea that oil prices are high to gouge prices and take advantage, kind of like the Black Friday, you know, because the retail stores, they don't make any money all year long. That's why it's called Black Friday, folks, is because on that day, the busiest shopping day of the year, everyone goes out and buys crap and their bottom line gets back into the black because the whole time it's been in the red. So would that be a conspiracy theory to say such a thing? I don't know.
Well, the beauty of it is that I actually, full disclosure, Ruckus, and I know you probably don't listen to my show, although what you just said sounds like you might. I I worked for ExxonMobil at one point. And I, you know, had to get out of it because they had me in human resource management, and they wanted me to squeeze working people, and I just couldn't do it anymore. And that was my line in the sand. But, you know, I understand how this business works, and the fact that we've had, you know, this alleged effect on the bottom line because it's a direct thing with the oil price and all that. You know what's funny is that what reaches your gas pump, it takes 90 days from the purchase of oil today to actually have that purchase price affect the actual cost of the product at the pump. 90 days. That prevails, even though I haven't been in that business for years. My understanding is that is still the same standard. Takes time to refine and transport and everything else, the oil from crude to gasoline, okay? So, what we are witnessing is, yes, in case everybody forgot, the metric on oil broke not too long ago and went into the negative territory where it was literally like, you got to pay me to receive a delivery of oil. That's the way the commodity price shows. Now, nobody did that. But the fact is that that loss, and also the retail loss of people not traveling, etc., etc., it costs the oil companies. They're recouping their losses and then some. That's what's happening. Okay, and it might sound like a conspiracy theory, but again, as somebody who held stock in the names of my children, not myself, but as somebody who held stock in ExxonMobil even at the time of the merger, which, by the way, I ended up with, you know, Mobil stock and Exxon stock, and we got both. Because I had Exxon to start with, and all that good stuff, which the ex-wife cashed out and all that. So I don't have any of that money, neither do my kids, so don't ask. But back to the point, I knew how that worked as a stockholder. I knew that how that worked as somebody interacting with the greater corporate mechanism. I understood that business enough, the logistical realities of it, to tell you that this is absolute BS. This idea that you're getting price gouged over Ukraine and the other justifications that they used to artificially inflate the price of oil so far in this time period where we've seen it more than double are also a bunch of BS. It is similar to the fact that suddenly when people decide to travel, the price goes up as well. They're capitalizing, you know, because you would think that if demand is higher, and high enough, it would create competition, which would, I mean, you know, just in a general economic sense, it would create competition, which would mean that it might actually drive the price point down because somebody's going to try and undercut somebody else. I mean, it's just basic business, right? But not if all of the oil companies are colluding with one another and the nation states whose primary business is to make this stuff happen, okay? Then no, you're not going to get that. You're going to get a cartel and several cartels colluding with one another to make sure that overall everybody gets their piece. Because I also know how the mafia works. Just side note. Everybody gets their piece, Ruckus. Okay?
Man, I've been saying for years to people and they just don't get it. I said, the corporate world in the United States of America is exactly like the mafia as far as the way it's run. Just take my word for it.
Well, except, you know, to be honest with you, the mob guys, they have better suits. And, you know, and you don't get billionaires really among the mob guys. You get millionaires.
The mob guys might actually have better ethics, arguably.
See, that's the other thing, is if you pay protection money to an Italian businessman, you might actually get something for your money. Now, when the other gangsters come to take your money, they just take your money and you get no guarantees. You get the privilege of them taking your money. And that's that. So, just saying, and you don't even necessarily get the benefit of vice. You know, those wonderful things that, you know, are out there in the black market that you can get through your local Italian businessman. You know, you don't even get the benefit of the pleasures of it. It's just part of the system, and welcome to planet Earth. That's it. again, you know, like I would say all the time about storekeepers, you know, they paid their protection money. Indeed, if you paid your protection money on time, somebody would make sure your store didn't get burned down. Now, you pay these other guys, you get no good assurances. Okay, just saying. You just get the assurance that they might leave you alone, but just them. They're not going to protect you from anybody else. See, the Italian guy will sit there and go, I want to get paid every week or every month or whatever it is you got to pay your protection money. And therefore, they have an interest in not allowing your business to be destroyed usually.
That's right. Okay. An invested one.
And that's it. And that's also why, you know, because there's a give and take. Yeah, they only get to usually be millionaires as opposed to billionaires. When you see that obscene amount of wealth, you know, coalescing in one place, you know it can't possibly be clean. It's just that simple. So, yeah, I do have more respect for those guys. And by the way, it's not just about Italians. I mean, any organized criminal or you know, faction out there seems to have a better ethical consideration for most people. You know, again, and you can choose to do business with them or not. They're not an obligatory thing that you can't escape. Okay, so I'm just saying there's a bit of freedom in the equation and the offer, okay? So, all right, I know, Ruckus, I'm making all kinds of jokes here. I apologize, but, you know, the worst thing about jokes is when they're true. So,
you know, it's interesting what you were saying about the gas business, because I work for a local moving company full-time. And one of the things that was new to me, because I'd never been exposed to that type of business before I started working for them, was the idea that every single one of the local moving companies across the state have a higher price for their hourly labor and everything that they charge on a weekend, mm-hmm. which is when they are in high demand. And it's exactly like what you said. Like, and to me, I was thinking, you know, because I'm such a, you know, such a nice guy and all this stuff. I think otherwise. I think, okay, well, wait a minute. If we're going to be hit up all the time and be so busy on a Saturday, why would we need to increase our prices? But it makes perfect sense that we're so slow the other times that we need to do that in order to make up for the lost, you know, income. You know what I'm saying? Well, see, and they all do it through mutual agreement, because they all belong to like an association of movers and warehouse labor people. So they all somewhere behind the scenes have mutually agreed. Now, it's not like a criminal thing, or I don't think anyone, if they broke this little pact that they've agreed to, would, you know, get, I don't know, hurt or in trouble. But you never know. A lot of these people hold a lot of sway and power with the regulations companies that you know, in the government that says, yes, you can be a moving company. So, but it's interesting, again, to note that the prices are much higher on a Saturday than they are during the week.
But see, there's a difference here, though, when it comes to labor and a commodity in and of itself, okay? And I know that sounds strange, because, you know, we're taught to think of it, especially in the business world, as all one and the same. But here's the reality again. If you're manufacturing something, it is different when you're offering it to the public at a price as opposed to a service, right? So when it comes to gasoline, the idea here is that it's both. It's a service and a commodity. So therein comes the rub as far as this goes. But if it was simply just the commodity or just the product, it would be based on market pressures. And again, if somebody offers it for lower, well, you know, then you have this this equilibrium that will eventually come to pass, where if somebody can offer almost the same quality or something at a little lesser quality, people will make that decision. I mean, honestly, you know, you can get a better hamburger in a lot of places than you do at a fast food joint, right? But because they're so cheap, they maintain market domination. And that's not about the service, obviously. It's just about the thing itself. When it comes to a gasoline, or even in the case of this moving company thing, which, by the way, don't automatically dismiss. There's probably no way for there to be criminal something or other, because price fixing is not lawful in a lot of places. Okay, it's one of those things that some people get in trouble for, price fixing, actually, where it's like, no matter what. I mean, they did this with the garbage industry in the Northeast, where, you know, they wound up breaking up one monopoly and replacing it with another, actually. because of the fact that there was price fixing going on even among their competitors, where their competitors wouldn't drop the price and even attempt to compete with them. And in that way, they were allowed to keep certain regions of business for themselves, and that was the agreement made, and that was broken up at one point. It was considered, you know, some level of racketeering. You know, it's not a major thing, a major RICO case, but there is some level of racketeering that can go on there where you're price-fixing things. However, when it comes to the oil industry and the gas industry, all of this stuff is completely legal and is supported by various state and federal regulations. So price-fixing is a certainty in that business, as supported by the government, as supported by the, again, collusion of the corporate assets, too. And again, going back to the example with the moving company there, there may actually be something there against price fixing on a service if somebody were to complain. And therein lies the problem, because if everybody who's in that business is all on board, who's going to complain? right? But here we are. That's the way business is done in this thing they allegedly call capitalism, right?
And I think, not to be too profound here, but I think that lays the foundation for someone if they want to start to understand a grasp of why there's a huge problem with some of these big secret clubs and the secret societies and the high levels of Freemasonry and the World Economic Forum and the International Monetary Fund, mm-hmm. And groups like that, you know. These people all get together and they make these type of pacts with each other and agree, like, hey, you know, if somebody comes to you and complains about what's happening over here, you're going to look the other way, aren't you? Because we're brothers, you know.
Right.
You know, so, but I don't know. And that's I don't want to get too conspiratorial there, but.
No, but that's in play anyway. I mean, and almost right up front, because, again, you're sort of what they used to call the front porch of the Masonry ring, right, when it comes to Freemasons. A lot of them are local business people that are cooperating with one another. Mm-hmm. That's what they're doing, and they admit that. And they say, we're also doing charitable works, which some of them do, but they're doing that as well. You know, sending guys to go get jobs with their friends who happen to be Brother Mason. Giving things to Brother Mason, like contracts and things like this, that don't necessarily need to be competed for, right? Locking out the free market because they have an understanding among a smaller ring of individuals that are supposedly connected at this particular point. And that's not even getting deep behind the scenes with Freemasons. And you can find that in any town where you see a lodge. Okay? So it's not a matter of conspiracy theory. It's just how deep does it actually go and how dark is it really? But again, the corporate world's got plenty of it, and you don't even need a ring. All you need to do is be part of the, what was it Carlin said, right? You know, it's a big club. You ain't in it. Okay? He was right. He was right. He was not right about everything, but he was right about that. Either you're in the club or you're not, and this is the same club they beat you over the head with when you decide to dissent. And, oh, by the way, I'm sure it would not go well if, say, a brand new moving company attempted to establish itself at cut rate prices in that area. Something might go wrong with them attempting to do that. I'm just saying. But it's impossible. Like, if you and I decided we were going to, you know, invest a couple $100,000 and come up with a gas station and do business with the lowest bidder and all that, there are places that do that, by the way. And there were consortiums of independent gas station people that used to collectively attempt to bargain with whichever company would sell it to them cheapest. But again, if all the companies that could distribute it all agreed to a certain level, and you have state provisions that don't allow you to charge below a certain level or above a certain level, well, again, it's sort of fixed, you know, from the get-go. So this idea that this is out of control due to the economic pressures of is a flat-out lie, is all I'm saying. Okay, so I don't know how you feel about it, but it's just one of those things that's been on my mind lately, certainly, that, you know, tell me more about how Wall Street's doing, because I don't have any stock. You know, tell me more about how your investments are doing, because you're invested in companies that are way overvalued and overpriced. And even when they're losing money, they're still gaining in the stock market. So how real is all that casino? You know, I ask that question almost every week with Mike Swanson on my show, because he's a guy who understands money better than me. I don't have money, so I don't understand it. okay, but I seem to have a grasp on how the business world works for some reason. Anyway, I don't know. All jokes aside, Ruckus, I'm sure there's other things on your mind lately besides the economic squeeze, or maybe I'm wrong. What else is on your mind lately?
Well, I mean, you brought up money. That's definitely another big focus and something on my mind lately because of, I guess, good old Joe came out and issued some sort of executive order about cryptocurrencies.
Oh my.
At a very interesting time. Of course, sending shockwaves through the cryptocurrency markets, which have been taking quite the beating for the last year and a half, up and down, quite a roller coaster. Full transparency to your listeners, I am a little bit of a cryptocurrency investor and nerd, so I know a little bit about that space. I've always been quite concerned about the coming impending, what's called a CBDC, central bank digital currencies. Have you discussed any of that type of stuff with your guests before, Chuck? Or?
Well, you know, I haven't actually had anybody who could adequately explain it to me. And quite frankly, I'm one of these guys who, although I was offered Bitcoin when it was about $80 a pop, that is my major exposure. And again, because I haven't had the money to invest in it, I didn't do it. I'm more of the gold and silver, physically possess it kind of mentality. And it's mainly because I don't understand how this is not going to be hijacked. Well, let me just throw this at you, and maybe you'll have plenty to say. I don't understand how this is not going to be hijacked by the very same people that control all other forms of digital currency. Because eventually it's being integrated. I mean, nowadays they offer you a card now. Even, you know, look, you want to combine your digital currencies of regular type stuff with your cryptos? We have a card for you now, right? You can customize it, I understand. Anyway, there's all this going on. And also the red flag for me was that FBI operation not too long ago where they said, look, we caught somebody trying to, you know, be engaged in a whole bunch of criminal conspiracies here and trying to... oh, what did they call that exactly? The whole, like, cyber hostage-taking thing where it's like, we'll shut down all your data unless you pay us in crypto. And apparently they were able... Yeah, the ransomware. They apparently retrieved a cryptocurrency transaction, the FBI did, and indeed turned out to be running, in another case, a communications hub where people thought they were communicating in an encrypted fashion with one another and engaging in, you know, less than above boards activities. And they were able to not only retrieve that stuff, and they were the ones actually running it, which is funny. I mean, I almost feel like at the end of this, the rug will be pulled out and somebody's going to say, look, you're just as trapped in the Matrix as you always were, because... this stuff is now clearly just as accessible by the banks, and they can shut stuff down. I mean, even a weird thing happened just before airtime, where the one guy that I've had on who lived in Ukraine and still lives in Ukraine now had money in the Bank of Australia, and they turned around and closed his account and said, we're sending you a check, which, you know, just for the record, nobody is going to get mail during a war. But shut him down, clipped him from being able to access that, even though he's in Ukraine, because obviously, you know, it's like, okay, maybe you're laundering money or maybe you're involved in the conflict or whatever, and have crippled him financially now. So he's stuck there and been separated, you know, severed from his money. And meanwhile, I've had experiences with banks and I no longer engage with banks. Closest thing I do is have a PayPal account, but I've actually got no regular bank account because I don't want to engage in that system or any other. I've kind of withdrawn as best I can, but I will state again, I don't necessarily fully understand cryptocurrencies to begin with, so it could be just my ignorance here, but I'm just like very skeptical. And again, anything that Elon Musk attaches himself to, I'm going to run away from. So your Dogecoin or whatever, I don't want to hear it. Okay. But by all means, I mean, help me understand this. So we only got about maybe 15 more minutes. But, you know, if you want to take a swing at that, or if you want to come back another time and do a whole crypto discussion with me, I'd be more than happy to listen, Ruckus, because I need somebody to explain this to me, and not the NFT guys, because they drive me nuts. go ahead.
Yeah, I think I would love to have a longer discussion about crypto with you, because it's a whole another world, and there's so many fascinating and frightening and beautiful things happening in that world.
Okay.
I'd love to introduce you to it someday, but I'm really actually technically in the exact same boat as you. I don't trust it for a second, and I never have, and perhaps I never will. But it's fascinating to me, and I invest in it because you know, I don't like Apple. I don't trust Apple. I don't like Facebook. I'm a bit of like a technophobe technically, but I'm no idiot. I can see, okay, well, the internet's not going anywhere. So if I could see, you know, 20 years ago and be one of those people who could get like early on in investing in like the internet type stuff, I you know, that's a smart move. You know, investing early in Apple or Amazon, those were smart moves. So I'm at that stage where I thought, you know, when I started getting into this almost 2 years ago, because I started getting into it around the same time as the P word now, or the C word, whatever we're calling it, right, happened. And, you know, I got in at an early time when, you know, as an investor, these markets go through like 4 year periods, apparently, where it's like it's slow and its prices are low for 4 years, and then you get some action for a couple of years, and then it's quiet again for a couple more years or whatever. It goes through all these cycles. And so I got in early at the beginning of a bull run cycle. So I managed to make a small amount of profit. Now, you know, I don't have a lot of money to make a lot of money, but I was like, hey, neat, look at that. This thing that I don't even know what it is or understand that's invisible made me money. So, you know, as I was doing that and learning more about it, I got really excited about what it could be. And then at the same time, I got really pissed off at how quickly and easily the powers that be are already ruining it and what they're going to do to it. Mm-hmm. Because Bitcoin was designed as an answer to all of these things that we're bitching about and what you're talking about, because I hate banks too with a passion.
Right.
Man, I absolutely hate them. This was supposed to be created as money for the people. There's what's called a white paper out there written by the pseudonymous or anonymous creator of this stuff called Satoshi Nakamoto is what they call this person or persons. But this person wrote this white paper about what Bitcoin is, how it works, and how it's supposed to be used. And it's supposed to be like prevent those things from happening. You're supposed to be your own bank by owning this piece of this digital technology known as the blockchain that we're, you know, referring to as Bitcoin in this case, that blockchain. You own that, and you can take that with you wherever you go. Unlike gold, which is a physical thing, right, and has a store of value, but you can't, it's not very easy to transport with you if you have a lot of it, like, for example. Okay. This is being viewed now these days as a digital form of gold, because you could just write down these like strings of numbers and these seed phrases is what they're called, that allow you to get access to your account. You can just memorize this stuff and take it with you wherever you go, and then, you know, reopen up your wallet wherever you are and have access to it. It's not controlled by one entity. Because since this is spread out across the blockchain, across a number of supposedly anonymous computers, so you have to have a lot of faith in the way the technology works and that it's legit. But technically, the way it's set up is like no one person controls it, and no one government or agency could just shut it down, because they would have to literally wipe out every single node in the network, and they would have to know what each node is and where they are, and it would have to be like an all-for-nothing kind of thing, because even just because one or two or a few nodes go out doesn't change anything. It keeps running, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's really ingenious. So I thought, okay, this is great. But what you said is how do you stop them from just turning this into the same system we've already got? Well, that's what I brought up, right? You know, the CBDC, the central bank digital currencies. They, the elites, the powers that be, the banksters, the ones who have been like just, you know, making tons and tons of money off of us and, you know, forever with this system, they want a digital version of that now. And they've taken all of the hard work of all of these computer nerds who are obsessed with this digital blockchain and all, you know, there's so many of these cryptocurrencies, and they're not all currencies, so that's a misnomer right away. But they take all this stuff and they're like, well, how can we use this to control the people? Well, guess what? This technology on the blockchain, a lot of them, besides Bitcoin, are what are called smart contract platforms. And they are literally they're creating through computer programs basically a mutual handshake between one piece of code and another piece of code. They've taken the human being out of the equation when doing like an actual contract, a deal, and that includes a lot of things. And I don't know how to explain this, especially in the next 5 to 10 minutes. I can't. But here's the ultimate end result, which is scary. Okay, is that the money that they want to start messing around with and start having people using, and or even possibly issue to people in the form of some sort of universal basic income, is basically a programmable form of money. They can create this money, issue it to a person, and now you can only use this money, for instance, within a specified time limit, within, for instance, on a specified type of item, for instance, at a specified place. Like, this money that you get might only be good for $5 worth of McDonald's, and you have to spend it by tomorrow or it goes away forever. Using that as a silly example, but you can see very quickly how they could use this to control every form of your life. You look at the social credit score that's happening in China, and you combine that with what happened during the pandemic. You combine that with what we're seeing that happened with the convoy truckers and how they had their bank accounts and their donations removed. You see the sanctions happening on Russia. What if they could do all of this stuff at the flick of a switch and at their whim and say, you know, hey, Mr. So-and-so, you only get X amount this week, or you have to spend yours quicker, or you don't get this week because you didn't take your third booster shot, or because you voted for this guy, or because you didn't fly a blue and yellow circle on your Facebook profile. They really could do all of that, you know, whenever they want, for whatever reason. They basically own you through owning your money and what you can do with it. I'm a grown man, and I live in a free country, and I don't know about you folks, but nobody has the right to tell me what to do with my money, but that's what they want to do. I'm invested in Bitcoin, hoping that we'll make it through this on the other side, and maybe the Bitcoin or other cryptos might be still my money and belong to me, but any form of digital money that's coming out from the government, man, dude, I don't even want to touch it. It's worthless. It's garbage.
Right. Well, they've already beta tested this by taking what they call Department of Agriculture credits, because, see, people think food stamps is money. It's not. And it's in its digital form. It's credits from the Department of Agriculture, right? So they have a right to tell you that you can only spend it on certain things and that you can only spend it in certain places, et cetera, right? And how do I know this? Because they'll flip a switch during a time of a natural disaster and allow people to, say, buy hot food, which you can't normally do, right, with food stamps. But they do it instantly in order to make allowances because, hey, you might not be able to cook chicken if you go get it at the grocery store because there's no power in your neighborhood, right? So on and so forth. So I think they already have this established, and they've already got people's trained to understand this, from a behavioral standpoint. But no, I would love to go through a whole discussion about this and have you break it down, because again, this would be me learning. I'm fascinated by the blockchain as well, not just for the cryptocurrency end of it, but people have talked about, you know, you could probably store other data this way and just have it out there and accessible, and no longer do you require the front-facing, you know, say, website. Like, for instance, if I wanted to put my entire archive out on the blockchain, it could be accessible as long as people know what the code is to go get it. Something like that. And I don't, again, understand it, but I don't know, it sounds like a good idea, and Bitcoin does sound like a good idea, But I'm always nervous about, okay, what is the back end of this? Because I also remember the early days where they used the Magic the Gathering card database, the Mt. Gox, if you remember, was shut down, and people couldn't get a hold of their Bitcoin at all. And that was something that happened real early on. And I'm a Magic nerd also, by the way. So I did play and understood the database and understood what happened there, and wonder if that is something that can happen again. Now, I'm told it can't, but still, I'm very skeptical of it. Same time, I'd love to be able to afford to even begin to invest in it just a little bit, just to have it, because it seems to me like, and also, I don't object to gold or silver just as something to have also in an emergency. I very rarely get to possess very much of it. But when I do, I feel a little more comfortable, because I figure even if somebody turns around and says, look, that paper money, even, you know, because people say, oh, I love cash, that paper money, all they got to do is declare that that's no longer money and it's worthless. That's it. And it only takes a declaration to end that as a value at all. And then you'll be stuck with, well, what is digitally available and what can I draw on? And let's say they name a new currency. That can be done, and now I sound like I'm in 1990s conspiracy land, don't I? I'm sorry. It's just that I don't know. I don't trust any of it anymore, and especially don't trust the technology because I don't understand it. But I would like to. So I'll tell you what. Let's at some point in the near future, if we can, since listeners want to hear from you, and hopefully they're happy about this show, maybe get you back on and. Just stick to that as a topic. If I would have thought of it ahead of time, we could have done it for this hour, and we might have gotten somewhere, because, again, I like your explanation. I like the way it sounds, but I'm not sure I like the way it works, because I don't know. That's the honest truth about it. And I understand a lot of complex things, but I'm not going to tell you I understand the blockchain or how this works at all. It's kind of a foreign concept to me. I got a hard enough time maintaining my website, you know? I'm just saying. Well, go ahead.
I'll tell you what, Chuck. I'll turn you on to a couple episodes I did early on in my show. The Daily Ruckus was dedicated to understanding and explaining. It was kind of like an introduction to cryptocurrency for the listeners, as I was just discovering it as well. And a lot of people had told me that helped them understand it right away. So I'll send you a link to that episode, and I'd love to come back and talk more about that. And I know it's getting close to closing, so I want to thank you for inviting me, and thank the listeners out there for requesting me. Please feel free, all of you out there, to come check out alternatecurrentradio.com, and you can find my contact info there. If you want to send me an email, it's ruckus@alternatecurrentradio.com. I'd love to hear from you guys. Thank you again, Chuck. This was a blast. This is cool. I like this light and loose kind of thing.
Yeah, no, look, style. I enjoy just talking to you. It's fine, but I want to learn something too. So, yeah, we're going to have to return to that, and I will listen to those episodes. Also, I think if you go to alternatecurrentradio.com, you might even be able to get a Ruckus t-shirt. Last I looked, it seemed like every show had a t-shirt there. And I got to tell you, I could never solve even... See, here we go with me again. I can't even solve making the T-shirts. Aaron Franz has to make those tie-dyes for me. I don't even make those and send them out. No, I can't manage all that. I have a hard enough time doing my radio show, honestly. So I'm not...
Well, I have an Uncle the Podcast one. I'll have to get an Achelli one, too.
Oh, yeah. No, all that stuff is at theageoftransitions.com, and also Aaron's book, which is great on transhumanism and all that. So there you go. A cross-promotion. I'm going to have to check it out. Are those shows available in the archives at Alternate Current Radio as well?
For the most part, we are still backfilling them, mine especially. However, all of that is archived at Spreaker. I'm sure your listeners are familiar with Spreaker, but it's SPREAKER.com. You'll find the Daily Ruckus right there. Right. Every single one. There's like 250 episodes, I think.
Nice. Of course, if you're familiar with or listening to the Ocelli channel over there, I do have a Spreaker account as well. So All you got to do is search out Alternate Current Radio. You'll find that I follow them. I think they follow me back. And you can see that we're associated on there. So not hard to find if you're familiar with Spreaker. And, you know, all of what Ruckus has to say takes the time to explain something to me. So, you know, he's got some patience, and his presentations are very interesting and informative. It sounds a little more chaotic than it actually is when you call it, you know, the Daily Ruckus. Like, it's just a bunch of noise that comes in and disrupts everything. But no, it's not that. It's actually a very thoughtful and informative. So I appreciate you taking the time with me today. And appreciate you guys for listening and requesting Ruckus. AlternateCurrentRadio.com, there's your starting point. But like you said, check out the Spreaker account. And just look for the Daily Ruckus to resume real soon. So there you go. And thanks to Len Osanek for being on with me in the first hour. Ruckus, anything you want to say as we go out the door tonight?
No, thank you so much, everybody. Good night.
There you have it. So I am Mirlio Celli, and all of you are indeed the effect. Take care.